In a synopsis here, it, basically in 1979, you were a rising star in the New York art world, and you decided to take a change in your life, and you destroyed your paintings and gave away all your possessions and cash and monies and began to empty yourself of the identity that you grabbed. That led you to where you are now. So yes. if we could kind of walk through it, basically, to in my mind, what does a rising star mean?
Well, at the time, there was a film being made about my life. I was showing art. You know, I think in the late 70s, you know, art was a kind of false god where there was a kind of bandwagon effect almost going on where everybody wanted a piece of the art scene, and it just became something of a free-for-all. So I think in many, you know, and I had my small following as an artist, you know, I don't know rising star, it's words that other people have used, but it was certainly a lively time where the promise of the status quo was quite available. There was tons of money being poured into the art world. You know, I once described it as a kind of the new church where people sought their salvation in art rather than in their own inner life in many ways. So I think often when there's that kind of bandwagon, there, you know, I think the spirit of art often goes underground. It's often the place that's, you know, that takes a kind of courage to inhabit and explore. And so you can be sure when the masses come on board that, you know, art has left town. And I really felt that kind of transition, certainly in Soho. I mean, it started out as a place where artists went because there were big spaces and cheap rents. And then, you know, you had Helmsley hotels popping up and, you know, elaborate boutiques and everything that had to do with great abundance and little to do with artists finding the magic in their own inner life.
And that truly is how I see art, and I know many of us do, is it has to come from that certain special spot from within each individual. Well, I guess it doesn't have to, but and then the other folks, they have the eyes that'll attract the insides of them, I think, and then they can sort of try to understand it on their own levels. And it's very interesting to me that you were in a situation where, you know, most people would want to be feeling successful, feeling that the art world is just starting to get off the ground, and yet you decided to completely go a whole different direction or try anew, I guess, almost a new life.
Well, I think there's always this kind of duality that we have to be able to hold and find, you know, the higher truth for ourselves. So at some level, in the obvious sense, yes, it was, you know, the kind of glaring place to participate in, you know, in many ways. But in another way, I think, you know, your soul's journey calls for something else sometimes. And I think, you know, listening to the deeper call, it became clear that, you know, it just, in some level, on the surface, it looked great. But within, it felt like there was no way to survive the illusion of it. You know, it felt like this great inflated sense of being that you knew, you know, in your heart would not hold. And, you know, at some level, you're the deepest part of ourselves often knows better where and what to go for. So, I mean, I don't think I was necessarily very clear in defining that, but I think it got to the place where I just sensed that I could keep doing what I was doing, but it felt like a fear-based choice. Or I could trust a deeper intuitive sense of things where there were no guarantees and just go for what I knew was the place that made me come most alive. And so letting go of the obvious sense of life and identity and going for the inner sense of life and non-identity, I was, you know, put up against that choice. I went for the deeper sense of being, which proved to be the most important thing I've ever done with my life. I mean, it has been the template and the place of renewal. You know, walking into that thing that looked like the death of an identity gave me an identity I could not have imagined, you know, as an artist.
Yeah. Is there a visual way to describe that walking into the loss of identity? You know, I imagine it. You didn't do this overnight. So there was probably a lot of thought process, a lot of decision making going on. And you know, what was the final step where you, you know, the final thing you gave away or discarded?
Well, I mean, in a certain sense, it didn't happen overnight. And in another way, it happened like a kind of epiphany almost. You know, I painted, I was intensely driven. You know, I was in a building full of artists, and I was producing the most work. I lived in the building. Everyone else had studios. I mean, I was immersed in this work, very driven. And, and for the first time since I began painting as a young man, I stopped for a month. And I fasted for the entire month. I sensed that this was no longer serving me. Something was shifting. I didn't know what it was. And so in the fasting, it just became very clear, the choices I mentioned earlier, where I could keep doing what I was doing and give in to this sort of fear-based reality, or I could trust, which is finally what I did do. And, you know, I think leading up to that, it was that clarity, and the defining moment was realizing, you know, with a kind of excitement and terror, that jumping into this thing that looked like death, and, you know, you asked how to express it, it really looked and felt like death. And I think it's indistinguishable, because everything that the ego most identifies with as itself is what it gets let go of here. And so, you know, the best word I've come up with is a kind of metaphorical death. And it's a kind of classic experience. I mean, I think anyone who has gone and had a personal breakthrough, it has always, you know, come through something that looks and feels like death to the ego.
So it must have been a very interesting way then for you to learn, you know, the things that you valued the most, whether they were, I imagine, the more you learned, the less you probably found that these were objects and things that you had. They were more, perhaps, and I'm guessing here, perhaps more of an inside identity, like you were mentioning.
Well, I mean, you know, I think it was, you know, the best word I have to define it is more the inspiration. It's like, what makes us come most alive? And do we have the courage to walk into that place? Because I think we all have a sense of something that's like outrageously full of life, you know, and it's, even if it's only in our imaginings or in our myths or in what we might read about another person's life or find out about another person's life, there's something in all of us that has a sense of the extraordinary life. And I think, you know, to be able to give ourselves to that and to do it, we'd always have to let go of some level of security. You know, I think that's just the nature of the game. You know, to get that and to live that place, which I, you know, as I described, is inspiration. It's the inspiration. And inspiration, there are no guarantees. There are no promises. There are no necessarily material benefits. I mean, I know in retrospect that all of that comes with the territory. I became, you know, more known as an artist for destroying my work than I ever did for creating it, which is part of the paradox. So the material side of it came, and I have a new huge body of work. But all of that came later, but it came through the inspired life. It came through becoming the creativity that I was dabbling in the studio.
Yeah. What got you most involved? You know, you say in inspiration. Well, when you were a young person, a kid perhaps even, I would assume, you know, did you have that same feeling as a kid towards art or anything else of an inspiration at that moment?
Well, you know, I think we all have a sense of something more, and we've all been inspired by whatever. It could be a fairy tale, or it could be just, you know, an accident. We accidentally nailed the moment with something inspiring that we said or did, or, you know, so we all sort of flirt with the inspired moment in our life. So I think, you know, and again, being in the studio, you know, as a kind of laboratory, I think I really developed, you know, being an artist, like many artists know, you really learn to court inspiration. So in other words, you can't necessarily get what you want out of a moment by way of will, intelligence, and good intention. There's a kind of magic that happens, and often that magic comes by way of a sacrifice. You take a risk, even within doing a painting or whatever you do, you take a risk. Maybe you'll lose what you have, which is a kind of status quo. You've brought things up to a place of the known, and then you take this little leap and something new comes through that is inspiring. So it's always slightly beyond our human effort. But, you know, I think in art, generally speaking, artists court inspiration. And I think being in the studio, being so driven, producing such an enormous body of work, that I became quite good at tapping into inspiration in the safety of the studio. And it was almost like when I said, well, what a good boy am I, that I feel like, you know, the nature of creativity itself said, okay, now do it with your whole life, which scared the hell out of me.
Sure.
And I think that's what I gave myself to. I knew I could do it in the studio, but could I do it with my whole life?
Yeah, I would have liked to have been in the room when you had that conversation with yourself going on. That must have been a real trying moment.
Well, again, it's like death. But,
yeah.
You know, it's like, I think, and it was that radical and that drastic. It was like you could risk it all right here and right now, but there was something completely exciting, you know, and terrifying. It was that kind of a moment. And I think we all come up against moments like that. And what are we going to do with them? We all know where we've sold our souls down the river. And I know for me that was a very defining moment that, again, has become the place in the cyclical nature of life. We all come around to the place of our limitation over and over again, you know, the place of the proverbial death experience. And what we do there, most of us recoil, most of us try and buffer ourselves from it. The gift of having, in a sense, let the gods know I meant business one good time is the promise and a kind of memory that kicks in of how to let go again and again. So the ultimate gift out of the experience is the renewal that comes, that continues to come. I mean, because we're all doing our best. We're all generally pretty good people. You know, we're trying to do what we're trying to do with the best of our intentions. But it's not our good intentions that make the magic. It's the surrender. It's the place when you come up against death, you know, are you going to try and prove yourself or keep something that's no longer serving us alive, or can we surrender into it and let the magic itself, the inspiration itself, carry you beyond the limit, the human limit? And that is the gift of walking into death. That's the ultimate gift of it, is the renewal, the ability to do that.
The Inspired Heart, your book, An Artist's Journey of Transformation, speaking of walking into the tunnels of death, throughout the book, you meet many, many interesting and important people during your transformation. Would you care to mention an experience or two so we can kind of, you know, give folks that may listen to this interview a little taste of the people that were on your journey back to where you are now?
Well, I mean, I tried to speak of the transformational moments, you know, to stay on track where things shifted radically. You know, and some of those stories involve everything from, you know, seeing the mystery and the magic in spending time with a schizophrenic to, you know, meeting and being inspired by famous people like Lavillenia. So it's I tried to bring it all in there. You know, I mean, I think, you know, like a general story, I will say that, you know, in many cultures, the mentally insane were very often, certainly indigenous cultures, the mentally insane were considered the shamans of the society. You know, when they were crazy, they were just crazy. But when they were divine, and they led the people, you know, and people treated them like a poem. You know, they didn't expect literal reality to hold up very well with them. And yet they would say things that would, like, they would know was just a kind of inspired divine statement. And I think, you know, like an example of a story in my book was about spending time and sort of learning, you know, there's a proverbial swan in a Hindu tale where a swan can drink watered down milk and drink only the milk. I think, you know, like that story of really paying attention to insanity, even, you learn to drink the milk. you know, because there's a lot of water in insanity, but there's also the divine. And I think what you find is there's that in everything. It's in art, it's in a walk in the woods, it's in walking down the street, having a piece of paper blow up against your shoe, and being able to read a sign in the paper that actually supports the totality of that moment in some mysterious, poetic way.
Yeah, I agree with you completely on those statements. Yeah, I appreciate moments of deja vu, and very similarly to a piece of paper blowing up, and there is a connection between what's happening at that moment and that paper coming up and grabbing you.
Yeah,
I am a firm believer in a deja vu moment or moments similar. Yeah,
yeah, and in deja vu is your unconscious, you know, coming through with a reminder of your totality. I mean, I think that's sort of almost literally what deja vu is.
Yeah.
It's a place of knowing, remembering who you are in the larger mythos of your life, rather than in the nitty gritty of, you know, just earn a buck and have more sex or whatever.
Yeah, else. Right. I really want to appreciate, actually, you sending me the book to me. This was a, and I want to make sure people that take the time to listen and flip through your website, which we'll talk about momentarily, that people really take their time and dissect the book. It's an amazing tale, and I have to give you credit for taking that step in a different direction and being bold enough to do it. I don't think, you know, us talking about it, people could never, until they read it themselves and soak it in, I don't think they could ever understand all the things that you have done and went through in your life to, where are you now? Let's talk about where you are now. You have written this book, The Inspired Heart. You go out and do some seminars. What are those like?
Well, there's a Parabola magazine. There's mm-hmm. a Parabola film about my art and life. So part of going out is showing the film and working with people, you know, just talking, giving, you know, speaking, answering questions, doing a lot of that. There's a new film, Studio Dialogue, which will be an extension to In the Hands of Alchemy, the Parabola film, which will be by Sentient Publications. So I'm involved with that. I'm doing a lot of writing. I write a monthly piece for a New York think tank. You know, I'm sort of the fringe voice of the artist.
Nice, nice.
This very official kind of think tank that mostly deals with changing trends in the world.
And their name?
Inferential Focus.
Nice. You know, so you're very busy. You're not just talking to people about your book, like
yeah,
you said.
I'm doing art. I mean, I'm not. You know, I mean, I'm busy, but I'm busy in the way that I want to be.
Yes.
No, I managed to do these very elaborate art pieces. There's a new one right on our homepage on our website, which is handsofalchemy.com. You know, I sort of do what the moment calls for, but I feel, you know, to answer your question more fully about where am I at now, I feel, you know, it was, you know, what we talked earlier about the death and, you know, the difficulty of that kind of encounter. I feel it at the further end now where it's more the celebratory stage. It's like learning to dance. You know, there's such an awkwardness about confronting our ultimate sense of demise and then having, you know, returning to the world and actually learning the steps of the dance. Okay, well, I can do this dance. And then I think we get to retire in the best sense of the word, which is kind of, it's not that we have to, you know, that we become unconscious in a couch potato. It's more like, you know, you learn the steps. You stay conscious. You learn the steps of the dance, and then you can, and then it becomes a dance. It's not just this awkward put your feet here in this difficult spot. It's more like a celebratory kind of dance, which is the later stages, which I feel is the gift of that making that kind of a leap, in a sense.
It was a very adventurous leap. You seem like the type of person I would enjoy going on vacation with.
Never, well, come visit me on Whidbey Island.
You never know what kind of good times would be around the corner, or maybe even some bad times.
Yeah, it's all there. But
it's
I
all
think
there.
You certainly treat it all differently. When, I mean, the fact is, life is. There's always going to be challenges. But what are we going to, like, you know, die in the water, or are we going to know? You know, I think when the place of death comes around on the guitar again, I think we can do. You know, I think when you have walked into it enough, and it's become an ally in a sense. you're always going to shake in your boots. There's always a moment of terror, and that those moments continue to come. Except right next to that, and here's the paradox, is you also get very excited because you know that's where the miracle is. That's where the inspiration is. So it's like being able to hold those two things, I think, is the best we can do as human beings.
Hmm. Yeah, stay balanced. Now, do you have any thoughts to people that might be contemplating a major change in their life, or maybe any principles or ideas that they could try to follow in their quest for a transformation?
Well, I mean, I just think we're all, I think to, for anybody to try and do what I did in the way I did, it would be ridiculous. I think we're all in the best seat in the house. I mean, trust your life exactly where it is and look for the next moment. I think there's something very important about asking, about going about life like a quest, asking for guidance, asking for the right moment, the right move, the right decision. And I think if you go about it with a kind of reverence instead of a kind of willful arrogance, all based on material success, I think we will all do just fine, you know. And that's the only advice I could give, is know you're in the best seat and then look for the next moment of inspiration that's going to take you to the place we need to go to fully live out our lives and, you know, the deeper myths of our lives, because that's the stuff that changes the world. That's ultimate success. I mean, money and all the things that we think we want come with the territory, but, you know, the soul doesn't come with money and success in the world. It doesn't work the other way around.
Right. Yeah, it's not a vice versa there, no. Now, if folks want to spend a little bit more time getting to know you and the Inspired Heart, and your DVD as well that you mentioned. What was the name of the DVD again?
It's In the Hands of Alchemy, and there's a new film that's going on to the end of it called Studio Dialogue, which was filmed in my large studio that's now full of my interactive sculptures, and so it's pretty sexy. They did a beautiful job. Right. There's art, and my wife sings a Susan McEwen song backed by live musicians.
Nice.
So they did a really nice job.
Very nice. And the website is handsofalchemy.com.
Yes.
That would be
all my art is on there, and the films and book.
It's a very well done and pleasant to the eyes website as well.
Yeah, it was a gift from a young Microsoft employee.
Well,
he created it for us.
He did you right. It's a nice face. It's a nice face for you guys. And I want to thank you for spending time. Yeah, I want to thank you for being someone who is bold enough to take a leap.
Well, thank you, Mr. G, for being bold enough to interview me.
Yeah, I know it's a stretch for me. But before I do go, I do want to know, before you made the change, or you had, your transformation completely, what kind of music were you listening to before and after?
Well, you know, I've always liked, people like Bob Dylan, I have to say. I like gut music, street. I like a lot of the street music. I like a lot of the rap, stuff that comes out of the wild, that hasn't been tamed by the system. And, so I think I still listen to all kinds of music, but mostly I like the raw stuff that comes from the heart and the soul.
Right on. Well, you're welcome to tune into Green Arrow Radio anytime then.
Well, I do. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll treat you right. But thank you again, and say hello to your lovely wife.
Thank you very much.
You take care now.